This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today, I'm going to be talking about Ridley Scott's The Martian, Sicario, which is finally getting a full nationwide release, The Walk, in limited IMAX release, and Sleeping with Other People, Partisan, and Gravy as the smaller films on the docket. But first, I'm going to talk a little bit about news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and the world-famous DVD roundup. I also have an interview with James Rhodey, who directed Gravy. He is also best known for being on Psych, playing Sean Spencer. We will get to that in a later portion of the show. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Thank you, Ron Burgundy. Let's jump right into the news. There's actually not a whole lot of movie news going on this week. It's just all rumors and development stuff that this movies that aren't even shooting sometimes. It's just a slow week for that. So I'm going to hit on a couple things I missed last week. The first one is Fast and Furious 8 is having trouble finding a director. Now, Justin Lin is kind of responsible for bringing that franchise from sort of mediocrity to massive box office greatness. He's off doing other things. James Wan, who did Furious 7, he's off doing other things like The Conjuring 2. And I think part of the problem is Vin Diesel has too much creative control on this with no contractual obligation. Vin Diesel isn't contracted as a writer or even, you know, like an executive producer, I don't think. But he has control over this because without Vin Diesel, these movies are going to collapse. So you need him as a star and you need his blessing and you need him involved and you need him promoting it. Because even if you ditched him in the middle of production, if he didn't promote the film the way he does, these movies would lose a lot of traction. One of the people he wants is Rob Cohen, which I think could be a mistake. He's the guy who did Triple X with Vin Diesel years and years and years ago. I don't know if that's going to work. I've heard some people suggest that Vin Diesel should actually direct this one, which is a possibility because he's already intimately involved in the production process and calling creative decisions on this stuff. Why not just put him in charge? And then if you want people to, you can have him essentially ghost direct. It's kind of what Angelina Jolie did with Unbroken, where other people directed the movie. She was just there to nod and smile. Now, the other piece of news I want to hit is Prometheus 3 and 4 are rolling into production with Ridley Scott. And let's ignore Neil Blomkamp's Alien 5 for right now, because I'm still not quite sold that that's going to be a great movie, simply because Neil Blomkamp did one really good movie, which was District 9. His next two were kind of both a real mess. Prometheus 2 is going to be called Alien Paradise Lost, in which Noomi Rapace and Michael Fassbender's character head off to find the homeworld where the aliens, where the beast was created, and it's a reference to Paradise Lost, to find in the belly of the underworld where these aliens came from, and it's supposed to show the original creation of these aliens. I loved Prometheus. I thought it was a fantastic movie. So I'm all for Prometheus 2, and I know a lot of people were all grumpy about Prometheus, but I thought it was great. I'm interested to see what Ridley Scott does with this. And the final piece is, and this is all total speculation, Denis Villeneuve, who did Sicario, which I'm going to review later in the show, he also did movies like Enemy with Jake Gyllenhaal a couple years ago and Prisoners a couple years ago with both Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman. I think he's a fantastic director. I wasn't a huge fan of Prisoners, but I loved Enemy, and you'll hear what I have to say about Sicario. He wants to do a James Bond film, and here's where I have to say, I don't know if he'd be a good choice, because James Bond needs to be action. This guy is not an action director. He's a slow burn, dramatic movies that kind of bridge onto horror movies, even if they don't have any traditional horror elements to it, and that's not what James Bond is. James Bond needs to be a little more pop and camp, and I don't know whether Denis Villeneuve can pull that off. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Let's first hit the one that's going to come out later, because I want to get to the next one and take a little more time. Really, the first one I'm going to talk about is Angry Birds. It opens on May 20th of next summer, and of course, is an animated film based on the game.
Hey, Red, how are you?
Oh, I'm horrible.
We're going to be working on managing our anger through movement.
Sometimes when I get upset, I have been known to blow up.
Greetings! I am a pig.
What's a pig?
This looks cute. They don't give much sense of story. It's essentially taking a tablet game or our phone game and playing off the backstory. I think it can work the way Minions worked. I think that's essentially what we're looking at. It feels like it would be that kind of level of humor and goofiness. And I'm okay with that. I could see that happen. It'd be better than men making another terrible Ice Age movie. So, you know, I say go for it. The next one I want to talk about is Truth, which opens just in a couple weeks on October 16th. And it is about George W. Bush's questionable military history.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you my friend, Dan Rather.
I'm the producer. I put the team together. We have Lucy Scott to run point. Colonel Roger Charles worked Abu Ghraib for us. Mike Smith, he was a researcher for us back in 2000.
What's our next move?
I might have something for the election.
The President of the United States may have gone AWOL from the military.
I remember when I saw the trailer of this, I thought, really, this is we're getting an entire movie out of this. And I'm sure for those of you out there who just hated and reviled Bush as a president, and I'm not defending or bemoaning him, I'm just saying for that segment of the population that hated Bush, you're going to love this. You're going to lap this up. But I think for the people who are somewhat apolitical, who are moderates or middle of the road, or those who are Republican, they're either not going to care or not like this movie. This is a movie that is for the zealots. This is the movie for the people who just reviled Bush. Just like it reminded me of the 90s, when there was this resurgence of movies about Nixon. Of course, you had Nixon, which was an absolute mess, done by Oliver Stone. It was just bloated and out of control. But you also had movies like Dick with Michelle Williams and Kirsten Dunst about these two airheads who meet Richard Nixon. You have When Elvis Met Nixon. There was a whole bunch of movies that had Nixon showing up in the 90s, and they all bombed. Why? Because that was old news. That happened 20 or more years before the movie came out, and it's beating a dead horse, literally beating a dead character, because Nixon, these were all made after Nixon died. And this reminds me, this movie, Truth, reminds me of Frost Nixon, which was a very competently made movie, a well-acted movie, but I remember watching that movie and thinking, so what? I mean, it wasn't even addressing the issues that happened in the presidency with Nixon. Frost Nixon was addressing an interview with Nixon where he kind of sort of maybe said something, but not really. And really, the most interesting part of it was how the character of David Frost, who was a real guy, sort of rose to the level of conducting a Barbara Walters-style interview when he was really just a fluff journalist, kind of like Graham Norton. You don't expect Graham Norton to do a hard-hitting interview with anybody. It's Graham Norton. I mean, just pulling a British guy out of my hat for this one. The thing with Truth is, I lived through this, and I'm like, this wasn't that big of a news story when it actually happened. And it's about something that happened to a president who's no longer in office, who's been out of office for 7 years. So what happened to this president before he became president, and it really had no impact on history. So why do we even care? And plus, you've got Robert Redford playing Dan Rather. Dan Rather was a blithering idiot. I always thought he was dumb. I mean, I remember back in the 80s watching him. We had Dan Rather, Peter Jennings, and Tom Brokaw. And Tom Brokaw was a professional, and he was the closest you could ever even remotely come to Walter Cronkite. Peter Jennings was kind of a arrogant SOB, and then Dan Rather was just kind of an idiot. It makes me think of if a group of birthers get together and make a movie in 8 years about Obama, and they're going to call it The Certificate, and it's about his birth certificate, about whether he was really born in this country or not. It's kind of moot at that point. And who's really saying anything? And it falls into this level of conspiracy, and who did this and who was really wrong. And technically this was wrong, but maybe not. I don't know. This, the truth just does, it just doesn't grab me. I mean, our brand is Crisis looks interesting. It looks like it's a biting look at politics, whereas Truth looks like it's trying to bite at politics without putting its teeth in. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Sicario and The Walk. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr rolling into the movie reviews. Let's first talk about Sicario. Emily Blunt plays an FBI agent who is assigned to a drug task force and uncovers the unsettling reality of a border war while they're trying to root out a kingpin.
State Department is pulling an agent that specializes in cartel activity.
FBI!
You'll be part of the team.
What's our objective?
To dramatically overreact.
We're not American. Who do you work for now?
I go where I'm sent.
Gotta be careful around these people.
I just wanna know what I'm getting into.
You saw things you shouldn't have seen.
This has actually been out for a couple weeks in limited release. It started out with just, you know, the big cities like New York, Chicago, LA. One of the show's affiliates down in McAllen, Texas on KURV, they've been wanting me to talk about this for a couple weeks because it's right down there near the border. So this is very interesting to people who live down near the Mexican border, because, you know, it's I mean, I live in Ohio. This is not an upfront and personal thing to me because I really don't worry about border. I mean, technically, we're a border state. Ohio borders Canada. If you really want to swim across Lake Erie, I guess you could do it. So I have to say, I absolutely love this movie. I was sucked in. And a lot of it has to do with Denis Villeneuve's directing. He doesn't make it an action movie, although it has action movie elements here and there in it, scattered throughout. But it's not a dumb Michael Bay kind of shoot 'em up. It's very deliberate. It's very slow at times, but not in a bad way. It takes its time. In a lot of ways, I had somebody point out, they said they were reminding them of Silence of the Lambs, and it really feels like that, where it almost feels like a horror movie. And it's basically showing what a sausage factory it is in dealing with the war on drugs. Because it's ugly, it is messy, it is unpleasant, and you do not want to see how this stuff works on the ground level, because it is unpleasant, and this movie brings that across. Now, Emily Blunt's character is actually, she's kind of a throwaway. I mean, she's getting a lot of attention for it, but really, she's just the audience surrogate in this movie. You could have had anybody in that role, and it just had Emily Blunt. That's just who got the role. She really doesn't do anything in the movie except to bring you through the story. She allows you to come along with this task force, which has some very questionable people involved, and you kind of see it through her eyes. I think she does a great job acting, but really the real props go to Benicio del Toro in the role of a, let's just call him a freelancer from another country who's helping out in this transaction. Josh Brolin's also in it, and he's very good. It's got this ever-present, visceral soundtrack. That's one of the best soundtracks I've heard in a long time, because it does sort of spin off of the very popular synthesized soundtrack, which is going back to it's an 80s throwback, which you see a lot in movies now, and I love that, but this is done in a very different way. And it builds, and it's slow, but it gets you kind of right in your heart, and that's very powerful, and the cinematography is fantastic. All the elements of the movie are brilliant, and it's expertly put together. It's a gritty movie, and it is at times extremely unpleasant, but it's also a fascinating film that deserves all the accolades that it's getting. So, gosh, this is one of my favorite films of the year. I have to say, I was a little bit skeptical going in, because I didn't know. I mean, the trailers aren't that good, but I don't know how you get across the flavor of the movie without actually just seeing the movie. But trust me, it's a fantastic piece and totally worth seeing. Sicario totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Walk. French highwire walker Philippe Pettit travels to New York City in 1974 to make his infamous walk between the World Trade Center and Twin Towers.
And people ask me, why do you risk death? For me, this is life.
Welcome to New York. Anything to declare?
I'm going to hang a high wire between the two towers of the World Trade Center and walk on it.
Good luck.
No matter where I was going or what I was doing, I was always searching, looking for the perfect place to hang my wire.
Whoa.
I need you to help me pull this off.
If you've seen the movie Man on Wire, which is a documentary that came out about 7 or 8 years ago, that recounts the situation. Or if you were alive in 1974 and you remember when this happened, maybe you're in New York, who knows? This was a big story, and it's fascinating to watch because it's a dramatized version. It's directed by Robert Zemeckis, and Robert Zemeckis, I've gone on up and down with his stuff. I like some of his movies, particularly his older stuff. I mean, like, Romancing the Stone was a charming, wonderful, exciting movie, and that was made before he really got into the technical side of movie making. Once he started doing the Back to the Future sequels, which I liked all those movies, but once he started doing those sequels, he got wrapped up in the technology of things. Suddenly, every movie he made had some sort of whiz-bang technology to it. The Back to the Future helped pioneer motion control, and the Forrest Gump movie, that used a lot of digital effects, which, you know, it's second nature now to see that stuff in 2015, but in 1994 when that came out, that was kind of amazing. And then after Forrest Gump, his technical side started to overcome him actually telling a good story. And that's why movies like What Lies Beneath is just sort of eh, because it's not a really strong story, but it has some really neat trick shots in there. And I remember seeing it with a friend of mine who was a cinematographer, and he loved it because he was fascinated with how they achieved all these shots. But it was just kind of an eh movie. And then eventually, for like 10 years, Robert Zemeckis did nothing but mocap stuff. Stuff like Polar Express and The Christmas Carol and Beowulf. And he did Flight, and I didn't like Flight, but at least it was a return to live-action filmmaking. Now, The Walk is very much a Robert Zemeckis movie because the characters aren't as strong as they could be, and he kind of gives this background. The background's okay. You get this the background of Pettit when he's in France and when he's in Paris learning how to do the high wire, and that's cute, but it's very idealized, and it looks like a postcard. It looks like a Photoshop postcard. I mean, the backdrop, I know it was all probably shot in front of a blue screen or heavily manipulated, and it looks that way. And the cast is okay. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is awful as Philippe Pettit because he's got the worst Pepe Le Pew accent you're ever going to hear. I mean, seriously, I totally expected him at some point in the movie to go, that's what he sounded like. I mean, it'd be the equivalent of doing a gangster movie and have all of the gangster be like, hey, it's a me, I'm a godfather, here we go, let's go get a pizza. I mean, it's such a terrible accent. I've heard Philippe Pettit talk, and it's not the way he talks. But the film starts picking up traction once they get to New York and they start figuring out how they're going to get in the World Trade Center and do this, which you could never do now because there's too many people are hypersensitive, obviously, about terrorism. But I mean, he was like sneaking in there and bringing equipment up, and it kind of turns into this Ocean's 11 kind of movie. But even then, that's not the selling point. The selling point's when he actually gets on the wire. And let me tell you, it is rare for a movie to come out where I'm going to tell people, if you're going to see this movie, not only do you need to see it in the theater, and not only do you need to see it in the largest picture you possibly can, but you got to see it in 3D. This is breathtaking. I have been on the top of the Stratosphere Hotel in Las Vegas and dangled over the edge with one of their rides, and it felt like I was back there watching this. I'm watching the film sitting in an IMAX theater, my butt in a seat, and I can feel the back of my legs tingling. I can feel the butterflies in my stomach. It is an amazing thing to watch. And I mean, if you're afraid of heights, you may not want to go see this. But it's breathtaking, and it's fascinating, and it's gripping. The first hour and a half, it's fine for what it is, but whoa, that last half hour makes it worth it. It's one of the few movies, along with like Mad Max Fury Road, that you need to see in the theater, and you need to see in IMAX 3D. So I'm going to say The Walk rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent! Yay!
That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be doing 3 reviews of The Martian, Sleeping with Other People, and Partisan. there is something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's move into the next segment of movie reviews. We've got three of them here, so let's jump right in. The first one I want to talk about is The Martian by Ridley Scott. Matt Damon plays an astronaut who is accidentally abandoned on Mars and has to survive alone as he waits for NASA to launch a rescue mission.
At around 4:30 a.m., our satellites detected a storm approaching the Ares 3 mission site on Mars. During the evacuation, astronaut Mark Watney was killed.
This is Mark Watney, and I'm still alive. I have no way to contact NASA. But even if I could, it would take 4 years for another manned mission to reach me. And I'm in a hab designed to last 31 days.
I was not knowing what to expect from this movie for a couple reasons. First of all, while I love some of Ridley Scott's movies, you know, I mentioned Prometheus earlier, some of his movies are terrible or boring or real misses, like Exodus last year was kind of meh. And other movies like Robin Hood and Body of Lies that he did in the 2000s have been okay, I guess. So I didn't know what to expect. I tend to like his movies when they take place in space. I loved Alien. I love Prometheus. But on the other hand, Matt Damon comes across really almost too cocky in the trailer. I mean, like, there's a reason for the way he acts in the trailer. And that's just the person he is. Plus, he's trying to stay awake. But I was worried that this was going to turn into Castaway on Mars. And I was not a fan of Castaway. Speaking of Robert Zemeckis from the last segment. And I also felt it just, didn't we just have a movie that takes place in space with Jessica Chastain and Matt Damon abandoned on a planet? That was Interstellar last year, wasn't it? But this one does not have Matthew McConaughey in his cry face, so it's a little bit different. Anyways, this movie is exceptionally well made, and a lot of it has to do with the writing. Generally, when Ridley Scott has a really good, solid, almost pop writer, he gets some great stuff. And sometimes when he has a writer who's not as good or material doesn't quite gel, his movies tend to fail. He is very much dependent on who's written his films. And Drew Goddard did the script. This is based on a book I've not read, but I've heard a lot of good things about this book. And I mean, it just works. It's not a true story, obviously, but it feels like Apollo 13 in a way where it's like, what can go wrong? So much can go wrong in space. Now, the beginning of it, I took a little bit of time to sort of get into the movie because I thought that some of the things that happen, I'm like, really? I can't imagine that they would do that in that situation. And they do play a little bit with some science things because Mars is like 12 or 15 light minutes away. So anytime you send a message to Mars, the quickest it's going to get there is like 12 minutes and then it comes back, takes another 12 minutes, just depending on where they are in the orbit. So you can't just text back and forth. So when there is communication back and forth, they time compress that. And that makes sense for what they're trying to do with the movie. And so those science things don't work. But it's a great movie. It's nothing deep. It's more about the adventure and exploration and what would you do and how would you survive. And it does use science in a lot of ways. You know, even though it cuts some corners on certain things, it makes you at least feel good about science. And I have a science background and I appreciated that. Although I do think the whole line where he's like, I'm going to science the crap out of this stuff, I could have done without that. It's those lines that I thought Matt Damon just comes off as like he's walked out of a Kevin Smith movie. Matt Damon isn't a universally great actor, but he works for a lot, most of the movie. There's only a couple times he stumbles. And even though there's some actors that annoy me in there, I'm not a huge fan of Jessica Chastain, but, you know, she's fine in it. It works. Kate Mara does about as good of a job as she did in Fantastic Four. She's cute, but boy, she's just kind of a dud of an actor she's turned into. But overall, The Martian's a good movie, so I'm going to have to say The Martian rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent! Yay!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about sleeping with other people. Not that I'm asking permission from my wife. I'm just throwing it out there as the name of the movie. Alison Brie and Jason Sudeikis play friends who lose their virginity to each other and later struggle with all their other sexual relationships as adults.
Of all the gin joints.
Jay.
Yes.
It's been, what, 12 years?
The guy I lost my virginity to was at my sex addicts meeting.
You're a catch. You got a strong vocabulary. You look dynamite in a tank top.
We just spent the entire evening talking about how we screw up every sexual relationship.
We gotta just be friends.
Okay, but then we gotta come up with a system.
We come up with a safe word if we're having sexual tension.
Do you wanna talk about it?
Talk about what?
We're not a couple, but we act like one.
When you start sleeping with people, you risk losing. Never slept with someone I wasn't willing to lose.
This is directed by the woman who did Bachelorette, which was a terrible movie, and this is a huge step up from it. But it does kind of fall in that sex comedy rom-com, that modern sex comedy where everybody's having sex. And it falls into the trap of trying to be too blue at times, but it doesn't go too far with that. Everybody is just a sexual being that has really no head for regular relationships. And I tend to struggle with movies like that because I can't relate to those characters, because I think I have a pretty good handle on this stuff. I've been married for going on 20 years, and my wife and I, we see eye to eye on a lot of things, and I think some people are just kind of idiots. And so if the people who don't have their stuff together when it comes to sexual relationships, I have a hard time finding any sort of sympathy for those characters, because I'm like, just get it together, people, especially if you're in your 30s, for crying out loud. So, I mean, but it works. It's funny. It's way better than Bachelorette. Alison Brie is a doll in the I'm a huge fan of Alison Brie. So it's nice to see her doing something more and getting a starring role and playing something more than just Annie Edison from Community. And this is a cute little movie. It tells a sweet little love story that is entirely and totally predictable. But, you know, for that sex romp rom-com, that modern hypersexual rom-com, I've seen a lot worse, and I enjoyed this one to a degree. So I'm going to have to say sleeping with other people kind of rocks. Not in the movie, not necessarily action.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's hit the last movie in this review segment, Partisan. A child raised by a cult leader starts to question the group's assassination objectives when his mother gives birth to his baby brother.
What would you rather? Be hit by a man or hit a man first?
Hit a man first.
It was our decision to do everything we could to prevent you from the ugliness of what the world had to offer.
You'll have to look after them, be the older brother, and destroy anyone who tries to do them wrong.
The only reason you know how to hold that gun is because I taught you how.
This one stars Vincent Cassell, who not a whole lot of Americans necessarily know the name, but you might recognize him. He played the bad guy, I think it was in Ocean's 12, and he shows up in various American movies or movies that get big American releases. He was in Black Swan, but I believe he's French, and this is one of those movies that takes a while to kind of figure out your bearings in, because it doesn't give you all the information at the beginning. You just sort of have to pick it up as you go along. Now, if you know that this guy's a cult, he's raising these kids, and he kind of has this group of women that follow him, and he raises the kids to be assassins. And it takes a while to really see that happen. I mean, that's the catch of the movie, but you kind of take a while to see that come to fruition. And it's his son, or one of the son of one of the mothers in this little group who is an active assassin for him, but is starting to question the morality of the situation and question his free will in the group itself. And there's a lot of subtext in this movie. There's a lot of dichotomy in this movie where it's a great little family structure they have, and they all get along and they cooperate and they work for each other. And then they send the kids out to go do assassinations, which it's an unnamed city. It's an unnamed country. So it's sort of Europe-ish. But it's something that you can believe is very realistic, and you can believe that it could happen. It's a slow burn. It's a slow and deliberate film. And like I said, it takes a while for all the seeds to germinate in the movie. But it's worth checking out if you want to see something completely different than a lot of the other selections out there. It's an interesting film, is the best way I can put it. So I'm going to have to say that Partisan kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for those reviews. When I come back, I'm going to be reviewing Gravy, but also talking with James Rode, who directed the movie, Sean Spencer from Psych, coming up at the other end of the break. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr rolling into the final segment of Fat Guys at the Movies. First, let's talk to James Rode. He is, of course, most known for the TV show Psych, which aired on USA for 6 or 7 seasons. It just ended its run, I believe, last year. I always liked Psych. That was the guy who pretends to be the psychic detective, but he's really not, working for Santa Barbara Police Department. It's a whimsical, silly show, and it definitely has a lot of his humor to it. He brought a lot to the show. He worked a lot in TV. He's shown up on other shows, but now he's trying his hand at movies, and he finally got a chance to direct his first one, and that is Gravy. Let's play the trailer first and then go right into the interview with James. In Gravy, a crazy group of psychopaths take a Mexican restaurant hostage on Halloween and plan on cannibalizing the staff.
Here's the skinny. We have got a variety of wacky activities on the docket for tonight.
Meow.
The stage has clearly been set for an old-school, pseudo-European, gangster-style slumber party. We're gonna eat you guys. The raw, the cooked, one at a time, until we are so stuffed we can barely move because that's who we are. It's our tradition.
Every eve of every hour.
Tonight's not really about revenge.
This is turning into a snooze fest. We've killed, like, 2 people.
What films inspired you? Were you looking for stuff like Devil's Rejects or Bloodsucking Freaks or anything in particular you wanted to bring out from that?
I thought American Psycho and Funny Games, dramaturgically, for lack of a better word, were probably the 2 biggest influences. And then sort of on a more visceral level, I love the early Raimi and Peter Jackson stuff. And I feel like both of those guys don't really do that anymore, so there's space for someone else to do it.
Did you plan on going full tilt horror, full tilt gore, just because you spend so much time on television with Standards and Practices? Was it relief to be able to do whatever you wanted to on the screen?
No, you nailed it, man. It was the best thing ever. We went full scale comedy and full scale gore. We didn't really want to hold back on anything. I mean, I believe the movie's being released unrated, which, I don't know, makes me proud.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting question, because I remember a couple of years ago when Hatchet 3 was the last one I remember getting an unrated release, and it was a big deal because they weren't able to keep it in theaters because of that. Has that changed in getting an unrated film out to theaters?
You know, I don't know exactly like the machinations of what makes it hard or what makes it less hard. I mean, I feel like if we had gotten a bigger release, I probably would have had to go back in and make a few adjustments. But since we're doing like the limited sort of couple city thing, it was sort of like, no way. So I guess that's the upside of a small release, is that, you know, you get to put out the movie that you want to put out.
Was there any pressure from anyone to sort of tone it down at all, either in content or gore?
Never, not once. I was working with a bunch of producers who were completely hands-off. So I didn't have anything going on while I was making the movie. And then once we found Shout Factory, they got it. It was like the right people for this movie, and they didn't want me to change anything.
Can you talk a little bit about the casting process? Because you do kind of have a big cast of either recognizable names or recognizable faces or both.
Well, it starts with Jimmy and Mike, who are 2 of my best friends. So they were going to have to do it whether they wanted to or not. Luckily, they wanted to. And then we sort of built around them. you know, with sort of the most eclectic and what we hoped was unexpected ensemble of actors that we could find for a movie like this. We really did put together what I thought was a really cool, eclectic group of people to come into a restaurant and potentially get eaten.
What's your favorite slasher movie?
I'm going to go to bat for the original Friday the 13th. I feel like so many people give Carpenter credit for inventing the slasher, when in fact, you know, I think Hitchcock did a pretty good job of inventing the slasher. But I get it, the killer POV and the score and all the stuff that we all appreciate about Halloween, it's totally legit. But I sometimes feel like Friday gets dismissed as like a pure knockoff or like a piece of camp. And it certainly became that. But that first Friday the 13th, I think it holds up with, you give me any slasher, I think it's right there. And it obviously launched a franchise that spans decades and still hasn't gone away.
And thanks for using practical blood.
Yeah, you're very welcome, man. You got it.
It was great to have a chance to sit down and talk with him about this movie, because part of it is, it's a horror movie, and this is the first horror movie of October. You know, of course, it's October. I love horror movies, and I watch horror movies all through October. This is, of course, one of the horror movies that I'm going to be covering this Halloween season. There's going to be a couple more coming up in the next couple weeks, and this is a way to kick it off, especially after talking with James about Gravy. I get a better appreciation with what he was trying to do. I was not ever a huge fan of Funny Games, and he kind of bases it on that. And mainly because there's a certain subgenre of thrillers that involve kidnapped people that are being put through the ringer. And it makes sense, knowing that he was coming at it from Funny Games. And I was not a big fan of Funny Games. I tend to not be a big fan of that kind of movie. But this is way more whimsical and silly and goofy than Funny Games, and it's a comedy. It's a dark comedy, but it's a comedy. And it stars some really interesting people, Jimmy Simpson and Michael Weston, who he mentions in the interview, two good friends of him. They play two of the roles, and it's got this weirdly diverse cast with, like, Gabby Sabidi and Paul Rodriguez and Lily Cole, who's this British actress who shows up in the movie. I mean, I wasn't wild about the movie, mainly because I'm not into that kind of a film, but I appreciate the over-the-top nature of it. It's goofy and it's silly, and if you like that goofy, silly take on horror, you probably will enjoy this. It's also very gruesome, and it's very bloody, and it's very violent, which I think is interesting, because here's a guy coming from TV. And yeah, he was coming from a murder TV show. It's like, was about mostly murder mysteries, but I mean, this is pretty extreme, but in a whimsical, silly way, which, you know, I like humor in my horror, but maybe not as much overt stuff. So I wasn't wild about Gravy, the movie. I love Gravy, the substance, actually, but the movie. But I'm going to give it a kind of rock, simply because I think it's worth seeing for those who are into that kind of bloody kidnap horror movie, but really want to see it as in a comedy perspective. So I'm going to say Gravy kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office winner. Last week I said that Hotel Transylvania 2 was going to win the box office. I was totally correct with that. I said that it was going to win with $40 million. It actually did much better than that. It did over $48 million, which is, I believe, a new September record and a big hit for Adam Sandler. And here's why it's a win. More, I compared Adam Sandler last week to Nicolas Cage, because he did The Croods, and The Croods did very well, and that's the last movie since, like, National Treasure that Nicolas Cage did that did well. But the reason this is a little different is Nicolas Cage just showed up and did the voice for The Croods. Adam Sandler helped write this, and his whole creative team was involved in this. So it's a bit of a save, for not just for Sony, but also for Adam Sandler. The fact that this one is a hit is good for Sandler, and it means he's not dead yet, I guess you can say. I knew it was going to do well. There was no real kid film in the marketplace to compete with it, and I think that's what really helped propel it. Then The Intern came in with almost $18 million, and I think I was saying $20 million or more for that. And then way down, The Green Inferno came in $3.5 million, which is on the low end of the expectations that I think Blumhouse had for that movie. But it still is going to eventually become profitable, because it's going to make money back, especially on VOD and Blu-ray and DVD sales. That was kind of a win for all three movies. But this week, I think that The Martian, people are predicting in the 40s. I think $50 million at least for The Martian. Partly because it's the only new wide release. I mean, yeah, Sicario's expanding. It's made the news cycle hit already. Whereas The Martian's considered the only the first one because the walk goes wide next week. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD roundup. The big one this week is Avengers Age of Ultron, which actually came out on Friday. It didn't come out on Tuesday, so it's kind of one of those midweek spreads. So let's throw it in this roundup. Went back and rewatched it. And, you know, it's still a enjoyable movie, but it has so much on its shoulder in setting up all the sequels for the other movies, Civil War and Ragnarok, or Fraggle Rock, whatever the Thor sequel is. And it's setting up the Black Panther movie, and it's setting up Ant-Man, and it's setting up the new Avengers. There's so much that it's trying to juggle that it's just not as cohesive as the first Avengers movie. The other movies this week are Spy, which I enjoyed a heck of a lot more than I thought I would, with Melissa McCarthy. Check it out. If you haven't seen it, it's a fun comedy. Entourage, which I wasn't a big fan of, but then again, I never really watched the show. It's really more for fans of the show. Poltergeist, which is terrible. Skip that in terms of horror movies. It's a bad remake. And Cop Car, which is quite good, with Kevin Bacon playing a corrupt sheriff who's had his patrol car stolen. And then on TV, you've got Grimm Season 4, Bones Season 10, and Off the Boat Season 1. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Pan, Big Stone Gap, and He Named Me Malala. And that's it for this week. I need to go. I will see you all next week. And until then, have a fat time at the movies.